Hello, Columbus, Chattahoochee Valley, all my friends down near the Georgia, Florida line. I hope that everyone is doing well. I tell you, man, this heat has been on around here lately, so please make sure that you're staying cool. Make sure that if you're out there in the direct heat that you are hydrating, drinking plenty of fluids because, you know, we're at that time of year where we're right at the heart of summer, and summer is on its way out the door, but, you know, it always leave with a bang, so got to make sure we watch the heat. You guys, these COVID numbers, you know, we've been talking about them the last 2 weeks. We're still seeing a steadily increase in the COVID numbers, COVID cases. A lot of people that we know personally are suffering right now. Families are suffering. Good friends are in the hospital. Let's pray for everyone in the hospital. Let's pray for everyone that is going dealing with this virus right now. But I wanted to have a conversation today with one of our community leaders of one of our civic organizations, because they are still making amazing moves and making things happen here in our community in Columbus, Georgia. And I'm specifically talking about the NAACP. And as I say that, I do want to let you guys know I am a biased person toward this organization. I love what they do. I love the work that they do. I am a lifetime civil member of the NAACP. So I'm always supporting them and promoting what's going on, because the community needs to know. For those that are looking for people to come save them and organizations to come save them and elected officials that they never hear from, there are organizations out there that are fighting for you every day, and they could use your support with memberships so that they can do much more. They can use your support with supporting the programs. So I'm honored to have with me today one of my good friends. You also hear him here on the weekend on the radio. I think you're still on the weekend. We're going to talk about that in a second. But that's none other than the smooth Wayne Hales. Brother Wayne Hales, how you doing today, Doc?
Hey, good morning. Good morning, Teddy. How you doing?
Brother, I am amazing. Thank you so much for, you know, taking time out of your schedule to join us today and to have this conversation. You know, like many of us, I know you're a man that wear many hats here in this community. And, you know, many of us are stretched to get it done, because it must be done. And we need to make sure that it gets done. And one of those hats that you wear is you are the president of the NAACP. And just generally right now, I just want to know, how are things going with that?
You know, I've got a great team. The community elected some wonderful leaders, and so we're doing some things. And people may not see us all the time, but I'm telling you, behind the scenes, we're working some things out. I when I took over the position, I shared with the members and the leadership team that I think we can do better by going straight to the source. And sometimes you may not, it's not always about a press conference. It's not always about marching. Sometimes when there are issues, for me, I believe going straight to the top, I won't demean any position, but that's what we've been doing. There have been like four or five things that we've been involved with. The most one that we're really happy about is being able to, in some small part, to get Hector Aurelio's family the $500,000 settlement that they received. I met the family back in 2017, and before I became president of the NAACP, and I always said that if there's anything I could do for them, I would help them. And as you know, we had a press conference in early March, and we really believe, and they shared that they believe as because of that, it brought it back into the forefront. And so they were able to get that settlement. So that was a good thing. Since that time, one of the Superior Court judges will be retiring. And so we had a meeting with Judge Gil McBride and expressed to him, look, we need a black Superior Court judge. As you know, we haven't had one since Judge John D. Allen. Mm-hmm. And so as we shared with him, and Judge McBride said that he didn't make the final decision, and of course, we said, well, I understand that, but surely you have some influence. And as you know now, with the census coming out, we are the majority demographic in Columbus, Georgia, and so we deserve that. I mean, you know, we need to have someone on our Superior Court that looks like us, and so many of us may be coming through them.
Absolutely.
So that, to me, was it was a step in the right direction. We went straight to the source. And he, I will share with you what he told us. He said he would be surprised if a black judge is not selected. And so we're hopeful. We do know that there are two black candidates. And so hopefully one of the two will be selected.
And I'm so glad you guys did that, because as a practicing attorney in this area, I just think, you know, if justice truly is going to be blind, then justice must reflect the people that it serves.
What is bad for one is bad for all. Mm-hmm. And so we just felt that, and I know that other African-Americans are having some of the same problems, and so we're going to be working on that too. But this was a situation that had gone on for 3 years, and they came to us. And as you know, the NAACP is for all people, and they just asked for help. They just asked for help. And again, we went to the source. And I will tell you, $500,000 doesn't bring back a child, doesn't really cover everything. But they were happy to finally put it behind them. Now, the situation that we're trying to do now is making sure those three officers who are still on the job are terminated. And I understand they will be going to, there is an effort to indict them, but we'll see what happens on that end. But that's the next step.
Right, right. And, you know, Wayne, one thing I know for sure, and you and I have had personal conversations about this, we support law enforcement. We support our law enforcement leaders. This is not about attacking law enforcement. This is about accountability. You have people in all professions that needs have a check on them. You have bad doctors. You have bad lawyers. You have bad educators. If you look at a profession and say, oh, there's no bad people in that profession, then you're delusional. The problem is our country had become so polarized that when we tried to have that reasonable conversation about, we're not condemning all law enforcement, we're simply saying we need to shine some light on the issues that we're seeing happening in our communities, particularly to certain people, then, you know, if we can't have that conversation, where are we as a people and where are we as a country? It's not about who's backing who. It's about accountability and responsibility. If you are being paid with taxpayers' dollars, then you deserve the opportunity to make sure that justice is done and that these people that we pay are doing the right thing. And an overwhelming majority of them do. They love their job. They go to protect and to serve. And unfortunately, Wayne, and you know this, they get painted with that terrible brush because the system sometimes tends to want to protect those that are out there doing horrible things.
Absolutely.
So thank y'all so much for doing that. And I know I cut you off a little earlier, so let's jump back on. So we had the settlement, and then we talked about the judicial appointments that particularly the one here that may be coming up with the retirement of was Judge Rumor?
Judge Rumor, correct.
Yes. So he's retiring, and so there will be an appointment by the governor for that position there. And yes. And so what else are we working on with the NAACP?
Well, I don't know if you are aware of this, but we were made aware that there are some blacks and Hispanics and poor whites who, when they go to the emergency room at Piedmont, they are being turned away without being seen or asked to pay money. One person was saying, you need to pay $300 for us to look at. Now, that's against the law. And it was more than one. So we met with the president of Piedmont Regional. And I want to thank Warren Steele for facilitating that. Mr. Hill, Robert Hill, I believe is his name. And we shared that information with him. He did not know that was going on. And the good part was we had documentation, you know. So I think what that does is, because we went to the top, now we were first trying to be pushed off on the communications director, and I said, no, I need to speak to the president. So we got him we met with him in person. And what it does in terms of, as I see it, as NWC, now they're on point. They know that someone's watching, and so they're going to be They know that someone's watching, so they're going to be doing better. I did not realize that there's a black doctor who heads up the emergency room.
Wow.
And I don't know if you know Dr. Brown. Let me make sure I got some. You know, Cornisha
Brown, the national president of Jack and Jill.
President of Jack and Jill. Well, her husband runs the emergency room.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Oh, okay. My God. Frat, if you're listening, Frat, don't get mad at me. I'm sorry. I forgot. I knew you over there as a doctor. I wasn't quite aware of that position. I know exactly who you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah. And so he reminded me that we had done an article on him as part of the newspaper. And so we were introduced to each other. And so now, of course, we definitely have the insight that we can talk to if there's any problems. And so I would ask if anyone in your listening audience has a problem when they go to the emergency room, please let us know, because we've got phone numbers, cell phone numbers, and they said if anyone has a problem, give them a call, and they'll solve that. So,
and that's Brother Darius Brown. And Wayne, I'm glad y'all had a good outcome with that. And let's just take a moment to, you know, just celebrate that brother for a second, to reach that level of success within the medical field. When you're running the entire emergency room operation, you're not just talking to doctors, you're handling the administrative side of it too. Everything happens, how everything goes down. And as a matter of fact, the emergency room is the most challenging area of a hospital, because that's where all your immediate trauma comes in. That's where you first begin to care and make the most critical decisions about how you're going to proceed with someone's health care. And so I'm glad that you guys were met with those open arms and listening ears, because that's extremely important. And any hospital that receives federal funding cannot turn away individuals. Absolutely. That is the law. That is the law. And you're absolutely right. But
you know, when the top doesn't know what the bottom do, and people have their issues. So the front desk, when you walk in and see that person, they might be having a bad day. It's not right, but we understand that. So they might have an attitude. And, you know, so, but now they understand that we're watching. And I know they went back and had conversations with all of their employees about how to treat people when they come in.
Awesome. This is some great work here, Wayne. And see, you know, a lot of people try to minimize the NAACP just down to a lot of people that stands on corner and holds signs and hosts marches and rallies. No, that's not true. The real work of the NAACP that's not seen is the type of work that you guys are doing right now, when you're meeting, sitting down with the people that are in charge and putting their feet to the fire so that they actually know that the community is paying attention and the community is listening. This is why I support the NAACP for these type purposes right here. And this is why more people in our community should be reaching out to you guys immediately, trying to get a membership so that they can contribute financially to these type efforts. Because when the NAACP does this type stuff, Wayne, it doesn't just benefit the person that brought you the complaint. For instance, with Piedmont, with the hospital, now that's going to benefit anybody who comes in there who doesn't have insurance but who needs the opportunity to have some health care for themselves. And so that's the beauty of this work. We're not just lifting one, we're lifting all. We're making sure that everyone is taken care of the way they need to.
The rising tide raises all boats.
Raises all boats. That's absolutely right. We're trying to butter everybody's bread.
One of the things that the most recent thing that we dealt with, and I don't know if you saw the post on Facebook from Jocelyn Jaja Taylor. She had gone to the Rapids. Actually, she had contacted them by email, and she's from New York, looking to move here. And so she had inquired about some apartments at the Rapids, and they gave her a list of 6 apartments that were available. She said, okay, I'll be there tomorrow, the next day. Well, within 24 hours, she went down, and when she walked in and told the lady who she was and what she wanted, she said, well, we don't have any Oaks. They were all rented out yesterday.
Wow.
So as smart as she was, okay, and then she went through that. So she saw a couple of apartments, and they said they'd put on the waiting list. So about a few days later, she sent another email, had another friend send one, and they said, oh, yeah, we've got 4 units. So when she went back down there, all of a sudden, they weren't available either. So we had a meeting with, and I don't know if you saw that post at all.
Yes, I did. I did see the post. Yes, I did.
You did?
Yes.
Okay, and see, they, social media is powerful. Cause
yes, it is.
Somebody tagged my name. I don't know if they did it at the NAACP or the post, but either way, I reached out to her, and she called me, Ms. Taylor, and we had a conversation. I told her I'd get back with her. Well, I contacted the president, Pace Halter, and we scheduled a meeting for this past Monday. So we met this past Monday, and it was Ms. Taylor, her brother, everyone knows John and Randy Taylor here, and another family member. And so we met, and Ms. Taylor came in. I mean, I'll tell you like this, documentation beats conversation. She had a packet for everyone. She had a copy of the emails that she sent and the response. And so we're waiting to hear back from them. The conversation was okay, but the bottom line was, as a CEO, you would expect that you would have all the answers. Now, it's been 13 days. This happened August 5th. The meeting was August 23rd. And so when we were just asking questions, were the units leased by that time? He didn't know. And I nothing against him. That's my first time meeting Pace, but I think he's a pretty affable guy. You know, he's willing to meet. I think he's an honest guy. But so we asked him, he's supposed to get back with us in terms of finding out where they actually leased. And then we asked, were there any apartments available right now? When we met, he had no idea. Now, personally, it's hard for me to believe that six units would have been leased within 24 hours. Now, he said that's possible. It's possible because he signs at least 6 to 15 leases a day. So we give him...
He signed how many leases a day?
He does 6 to 15 leases, signs 6 to 15 leases a day.
For that one property?
Well, see, he didn't say that one
person. Because they have thousands. I mean, they have thousands of units all over the city. And if he's inferring that they're doing that for that one property, then they should have been out of vacancy months ago, because there aren't that many properties at the Rapids. So, aren't that many units at the Rapids. So, it sounds like to me, Wayne, he wasn't expecting you guys to come so prepared. And certainly kudos to Ms. Taylor for having her documentation together, which is a great lesson for many of our listeners right now, because oftentimes when we want to complain about things, we just show up to talk. No,
absolutely.
Documentation speaks. I tell all my friends all the time, as a lawyer, the best advice I can give you is write it down and communicate in writing as much as you can. That's emails, that's text message, that's even Messenger on Facebook, anything that can be re-pulled back up. But anybody can say they said anything. You can't necessarily pull up a conversation between someone unless someone recorded it. But, that oftentimes don't happen. So that's the awesome way.
Well, what I did, and I asked before I did, I recorded the conversation. So the article that I printed this week in the newspaper is accurate. We're waiting to see what his response is. He's going to go back and talk with his team. But I don't know about you, Teddy, but if you are CEO of a company and someone prints something so negative about your organization, or I would think if I had a meeting with the people who wrote the information, I would have all the information I needed right then, so I could share with them, hey, look, this is what happened. This is how many units we have right now. I would know that information. But we'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
Well, you could go ahead with that benefit, but you say you don't know about me. Well, my friend, I fall in the same category with you. You know, there's this massive cover-up attempt to try to make it look like, what it is not what it is. We know what a pig looked like. I don't care if you do put lipstick on it.
Right.
Right. So yeah, man. Well, that's good. I'm glad to see you guys working on this. Wayne, I got a question for you, and
sure.
I don't know if this is gonna apply for the NAACP, because if you guys haven't discussed this, then that's fine. But certainly, as someone who informs our community quite a bit with your publication, I do want to talk with you about it. Everyone knows at this point that our crime rate is absolutely through the roof. I mean, I think we're on, the 45th or 46th homicide for the year. And so you're looking at that. That's already problematic, because what we had, 46 all of last year? So here we are in August, and we are potentially on the way to matching the entire total number of homicides that we had last year. It seems like every year we've seen a steadily increase. This is not a new problem. This is a baked-in problem. I know people have a tendency to want to point fingers and call folks out and things of that nature. It's hard to call people out when a problem has been persisting for at least 4 to 5 years, a constant increase in this problem. But what bothers me the most, Wayne, and feel free to correct me if you think I'm wrong or push back. That's what these talk shows about. I want everybody to have their own opinion. But what bothered me the most is that we had a 3-year-old and a shot at Carver Park, and we had a 12-year-old shot and killed in the car with his parents. And I have not seen a sufficient, robust reaction from our leaders. Unless I've missed a Facebook post or a news conference or something. And still, it shouldn't have stopped at just one. These are our babies, Wayne. This is our future. These are our children. Innocent individuals that are now becoming victims of this unnecessary, senseless, absolutely just tomfoolery of crime and shootings that we have going on in our community. And Wayne, I don't understand, where is the outrage?
I think about that, and I don't have an answer for you. I don't have an answer. You know, you can have press conferences, but nobody, what is going to be the solution? We can meet, we can have vigils. I had a conversation with a couple of folks who've been in the community, who have been in the gangs, who are out now, who are successful business folks. And one of the sad things that they're saying is that, he said, Wayne, these young folks don't care. They don't care about going to jail. They don't care about killing. They just don't care. And so he said, when you have people with that type of mentality, he didn't even have an answer. You know, it was a thought that you pull these gang members together and have a sit down. I've had some former law enforcement officers saying that, you know, we need to bring back the gang task force and do what they used to do, the jump out boys.
Mm-hmm.
I understand there was a press conference today with the sheriff and the chief of police talking about that. So I don't know.
I think that was Thursday,
new
right?
Program Cure Violence. I don't know how that's going to work.
Right.
I don't know. I hate to speak on it. What? I've done some little research on it, but I don't want to talk too much about it that I don't really know.
Right.
I've written about it. I just don't know how successful that's going to be.
My thing is this. You know, he said they don't care, and I'm not doubting that individual or those individuals. As a matter of fact, I believe them. But when I hear him say that they don't care, where my mind goes is, at what point in our young folks' transgression from children to teenagers to young adults, are they getting to the point of crossing that threshold of becoming a person that don't care? Because they're not born like that.
Right.
We got to get to the root of the problem. We're not going to have one solution, one program, you know, hiring more officers. We looking for this light switch type solution that I don't think is going to exist to solve this crime problem. We got to look at how we dug ourselves into this hole, the draining of resources in the community, the closing of the recreational centers, the willingness and the attitudes of just kicking kids out of school with out of school suspension versus forcing them to stay there and actually do things like ISS or some other type of creative program. Program where we're not dumping them on the streets with the game bangers and the drug dealers. We are consistently creating our own problem. And I know some people say, well, there are some parental parts of it. Yeah, there are some parental parts of this too. But they, you have parents out there that are doing everything they can for their children and they are still losing them. So that mm-hmm. doesn't solve everything either. So until we have a conversation about a holistic approach and some real folks that want to see real change get to the table and talk about some real solutions, and that's plural, solutions, mm-hmm. because there isn't just one, I think we're going to continue to see this challenge in our community. And this is something our people need to be thinking about with 2022 coming up. If you're not happy, listen to some people that may be presenting themselves for local municipal elections that may have some ideas and want to see some difference happen around here. We mm-hmm. got to try something different. We can't keep doing the same thing.
Now, one of the things people talk about, man, you need more recreation centers to be open. Now, let me share something with that. Now, the idea of it's great to have the recreation centers open, but I will share this. When I came to Columbus, Georgia, there were, you know, I was over the YMCA, and you had Tony Adams with Boys and Girls Club, and then became the Parks and Recreation Director. I will share with this. If you have the recreation centers open, it's the people who are running it.
Absolutely.
Who know the people in the community who can, I won't say control, but if you think about this, when Tony Adams and Herman Porter and those who were involved in the Parks and Recreation back in the day, and they had the midnight basketball, for 17 years, in 17 years, they only had two incidents, which were two fights.
Wow.
That's because Tony, Herman, and those folks knew who the people were in the community. They knew who the troublemakers were. People were willing to come to them and share with them and tell them, hey, look, this is about to go on. You need to take care of it. And they headed that off in the past. Before they knew the people. They went out and said, hey, look, you can't come in. So, you know, it's the people that are running the organization that's going to be important, too.
And those people, Wayne, are still in our community. I can name several of them right now. They try to do this, but they don't have the resources. They don't have the places. They don't have the finances to get the supplies and things that they need. And they struggle doing the best that they can. And this is where we need our community to meet them, help them so that they can come to the table and put a personal touch on reaching our community. I'm sick and tired of our seniors not being able to sit on their front porch and watch the sun go down because they're afraid of a flying bullet. I'm tired mm-hmm. of men telling me that they're telling their wives or their significant others, if your car get low on gas, just bring it on home and I'll go back to the gas station and pump gas for you. We can't be living in that type of society. This is not the Columbus we want, and I'm sure this is not the Columbus that people want around here.
Right.
But we must look at it.
Can give up on a generation of our children. That's not
absolutely.
That's, you can't. We can't do that. That's
we cannot do that. We cannot
you have to
do
find
that.
A way, and there's a solution. But it's about coming together and putting aside egos and who's going to be leading this and who's going to be the one. That's not important. What's important is saving our children.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what's important too are those budgets, because when you cut all the funding from these facilities and everything, then, you know, that's where you are. And I say it all the time, and I've said it on this show before, and I'm going to say it again. I know people get all uber excited about the mayor race, so who's going to be the mayor? I really don't care that much. To me, what matters the most is city council, because they're the ones who pass the final budget on where money's going to be spent on the city. You get six on council, you got control.
Right.
And the mayor's job is to implement the agenda that's voted on by city council. So let's mm-hmm. focus on that. Let's focus on getting the majority of folks on city council who's going to do what's best for our community, particularly our communities right now that are suffering and seeing the most devastation, the most crime, the most hurt, you know, flooding with parents' tears and grandmother's tears because they've lost another child or another grandchild. I'm sick and tired
of that.
And
we must keep in mind that as of now, which since 2009, we are the majority demographic. We are 48% of the community.
We got to come together.
48% compared to 43% Caucasian.
We got to come together, and we got to be able to communicate in a way that bridges generational gaps. Our seniors Absolutely. Have to find a way to be on a accord with our young folks and our middle-aged people and vice versa. We got to find those avenues to talk to each other so we can know where the community wants to go as a whole. Wayne, I tell mm-hmm. you, I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, my friend. I always do when I have an opportunity to talk with you. And I'm just thankful that you took time out of your day to join me on my radio show You know, and I listen to you a lot. You still on the weekend, right?
I am. 8 to 11.
8 to 11. Okay, 92.7.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, y'all know where to find Wayne on the weekend. And I tell you, he's always jamming, got some good music going on. I try to catch him every weekend. So, Wayne Hills, thank you so much for what you do for our community. Thank you for your leadership. Thank you for your bravery and not being afraid to stand up. Thank you for going into the rooms that others would dare to go into. And thank you for walking with your back straight up and being proud of who you are, whose you are, and where you came from, my friend. Because it's leadership like that that keeps us going.
Thank you, sir.
This has been Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese with my friend Wayne Hales. Thank you guys for listening, and join us again next Sunday on Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese.
Opinions stated by various contributors to this broadcast, its website, and this radio program are not to be considered necessarily the belief of this radio station or Davis Broadcasting. Do you have questions or concerns or want to be a guest on Sunday Conversations? Send us an email at sundayconversations@dbicolumbus.com.